This conversation today is with Peter Roisman. Peter is the co-founding principal and president and CEO of Rev, which is a multifamily leasing company. Peter has 30 plus years of entrepreneurial experience and a track record of launching and leading businesses across different sectors. He's been in the sports agency industry, as well as in the multifamily real estate industry, as well as the medical industry. And he's done well in all industries. However, his success has not come without setbacks and adversity, that's for sure. I mean, anytime you get to hear from someone with this level of experience, you don't want to miss it. Peter drops a lot of knowledge along the way here, just a lot of wisdom for sure. With regard to the adversity he's faced, he talks about how there was a potential exit with one company that he was a partner in that would have netted him, I think, $2 to $3 million. And instead, he lost everything that he'd put into the deal and lost about $400,000. So that was quite a bit of adversity there. But it sounds like over the years with other entrepreneurial ventures, he's done, he's made up for that and then some. What I love about Rev, the current company he's leading, I mean, it's really cool how they've really separated leasing from property management. And he talks a lot about that for the multifamily operator. He gives a lot of info for the investor, the real estate investor, you know, as to whether to follow your passion or whether to follow what you're good at or whether to follow what people will pay for. A lot of career advice here, as well as real estate investing advice along the way. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Peter Roisman.
From adversity to abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm pumped today to have with us Peter Roisman. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jamie. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. This is going to be a really fun chat. I know you've been an active entrepreneur for many years and have experienced a lot of ups and downs, and you're in the real estate, commercial real estate, multifamily space, and I know you're going to bring both a lot of practical value as far as well as inspiration for our listener. For the listener who may not be familiar with you, who are you and what are you up to today?
Well, I would call myself a middle-aged guy who thinks young, and we started a new business about 6 years ago that we shifted two years ago from multifamily leasing to multifamily leasing tools. We created a couple of property technology tools that we're marketing today. One is an assessment tool so that any asset manager, owner, or property manager could assess their leasing team's performance. And the second is a training tool. We have a curriculum, Rev Leasing University, which is 130 online courses that train up leasing teams and get better performance out of them.
Nice. And I know before we hit record, you shared with me where you were calling in from. Do you mind sharing with the listener?
Oh, I don't mind at all. I might make a couple people jealous if they like warm weather. I live in Puerto Rico. I moved here just under 12 years ago. And okay. It's been a great experience.
Yeah, hopefully we'll touch on that decision and later. Before we jump back into your backstory, though, speak a little bit more about your personal quote unquote abundance that you're living in. So our show is From Adversity to Abundance. We don't pretend that that Peter has no more problems and will never have any more adversity. But maybe you've reached some level of financial abundance that you didn't have at age 23 when you became an entrepreneur. Speak to some of that abundance that you're experiencing today.
Sure. So I definitely have experienced both ends of your show and the spectrum of adversity to abundance. And I'm not sure we ever, if we stay in business, I'm not sure we ever avoid the adversity side of this because every day you have to bring your best. And the abundance side, I would say my most successful business venture was developing 21 surgery centers over a 7-year period. And then exiting at a fairly sizable multiple, 10 and a half multiple on earnings. And that's my definition of abundance. And so I tried retirement, I gotta be honest. After that, I took a year to see if, what I wanted to do. And I became bored out of my mind and went back to work.
I've heard that from a lot of successful entrepreneurs and non-entrepreneurs as well. I think a lot of us just need something to work toward and people to serve and a mission to fulfill, if you will. So as far as your backstory, you mentioned well, I mentioned, and you mentioned prior to hitting record, at age 23, you started your first business. Talk about that if you would.
Sure. At age 23, I had been accepted to law school. And while in law school, I started a sports agency and started representing my first clients. And I did that for probably 15 years and built a reasonably successful practice and ended up running, being absorbed into what's now known as Octagon, which is one of the top three agencies in the world, based in DC, actually.
Okay.
The offices in New York and all over the world. But ran the golf division, was involved in basketball, was did fairly well at that business and realized, at some point in my late 30s it was time for a change and I didn't feel like being on the road 26 out of 52 weeks and needed to see my children and made a change and was happy I made that change and had three careers since.
Okay. Yeah, and we're going to at least touch on each one of those three. So what made you move into that at 23? Why did you want to start a business and why did you decide to go into the sports industry?
So I was a college golfer. I achieved some measure of success. I was all New England and but in a small school in a small setting. And so been about 8 months in Florida playing, open tournaments and other events just to figure out where I stood against, the better players in the country and realized I was probably 4 to 6 years away from competing at the very highest level and decided at that point I wanted to represent athletes instead of being an athlete and it wasn't I look at it this way. I didn't enjoy going to the driving range and the practice facilities every single day and turning it into work. So golf for me was always fun, and get into a job I lost something in the translation. And so that's when I realized I could be on the business side of sport and not be the client. I could represent clients.
Sure. No, I like that. And did you still maintain your golf hobby and keep it fun?
Yeah, I'm still two handicap and still playing at it. I won a few club championships along the way and
Nice.
it's been it, I love golf. I still get to play a little bit, not as much as I like, but a decent amount.
Yeah, I mean that's something we do explore on the show sometimes is, when to follow your passion, so to speak, as far as, taking your t trying to monetize your hobby basically. And that can obviously work well for some people, but then for other people, they end up hating their hobby and not making as much money maybe as they would have thought, or even if they do, it becomes work, like you said. And if you're not loving it, what's the point and how successful are you really going to be? So speak to the listener on that point as far as, what as far as picking a career or what, deciding what direction to move in professionally, how do you follow? Do you follow what you're good at? Do you follow what people will pay for? Do you follow what you enjoy doing, such as your hobby?
Those are three great questions in one. And yes to all of them. If how you can get someone to pay you for what you're good at and what you enjoy, that's the best of all worlds, right? You've got all three combined. And I would recommend trying to achieve that. If you can't achieve three, maybe you can achieve two of those and still, have real success in business. Business, you've been in business a while. I've been in business a while. At the end of the day, for me, it means getting up every day with a passion, wanting to do it. What can we get done today? Not wasting a day. Time is our enemy. It's literally, you wake up one day and you go, where did those 3 years go? Where did this amount of money go? And so, my partners are all like that too in real estate. And so, we push each other and it's fun. And I'm in these ventures that I'm in today, I never did work with the people I grew up with. This is a chance for me to work with my old friends, which is just because we've been friends all these years. We've never been business partners. And
Oh,
so
that's
this is
cool.
one of those great experiences in life for me.
Sure. That's really good. So, I guess, yeah. So taking at least two of those three, if you can, and maybe three of those three would be ideal. But I think that in many cases that ends up being pretty rare. But I think you need at least one or two of those, obviously, to keep going, right? So in your back to your story, so you did the sports agency for 15 years, and that was pretty successful. Talk about, you said you made a decision to leave that. How did that come about?
I realized one day I was getting a little stale because I was doing the same thing over and over again without really a pathway to, a new challenge, I'll call it. I didn't really know what the next thing should be. And the company I was in didn't really need me to grow because they just needed someone to run this division, if you will. And I felt like I was being held back a little bit, not by them, but by the role that was needed. And so I just said, look, I'm gonna explore something else. So, I've always had good departures when I've left places. And I think that's an important point to make here. Golden nugget for maybe your listeners at the end of the day. There's no reason to walk away in a negative way. Experience that you've had wherever you are, I'm sure has been positive for you in some way. And so you take that, you wrap it up, and I'm still good friends with the people that hired me at Octagon. I mean, the guy who's still running Octagon is a good friend of mine, and he's been
Nice.
another 20 something years. So I think, so I walked away, and what I did was I took some time. I didn't have the pressure. My wife was working. I didn't have the pressure to immediately find a job. And so I took a month, 2 months, and I looked around, and I realized, there was another opportunity out there, which I grabbed, and it was to be the president of a sports ticketing company, and that was a really good experience as well. That's one of the ones that didn't end with a financial success, even though we had to sell out at multiples of what we had in it. It was a really great experience. I was tasked with making deals with all of my sports contacts, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NCAA, all the bowl games. I mean, so basically that I was in a good place. I could use my contacts and my skills, and was able to do my job pretty well. Unfortunately, that company did we had an exit, we had an offer to exit. We were offered I think a 2x or 3x multiple by CBS and chose not to sell, not my choice. And the CEO ended up, making, I think, poor decisions, and we ended up, the company went belly up at some point. And so I went from making several million dollars to losing several hundred thousand dollars of actually money in the deal. And so, that's adversity, right? If you ever are going to have adversity, you're losing hard-earned money that you put at work. You're losing 4 years of your time that you put at work, losing all the great relationships you put at work. But you know what? It's okay. I learned a lot. I came out of it, and I haven't made those mistakes again. So
Got it.
there
Yeah.
you go.
So, and just to be clear, the several million would have been what you would have been paid at that potential exit, right?
Would have been somewhere between $2 and $3 million, and I had 4,000 in it, and it would have been a nice
Got it.
return.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you did that for 4 years, and then before we get to Rev in more detail, what was the third career that you had?
career was as a development partner for a company known as Surge Center Development. We became the most prolific and most successful surgery center, outpatient surgery center developer in the country, and still are. If you want to look up Surge Center Development online, you'll see the company's done it well over 300 independent surgery centers around probably 25 states. And I was responsible for, I had a part in 21 centers, and I think I was the manager on, at least a third of those. And so, I mean, I ran the whole projects. I found the doctors to partner with us. I found the locations. I, bought all the equipment. I hired all the people. I mean, it was a, beginning to end running the project kind of deal. And I got ownership in it. And so when those centers sold, that's when I took my pause and thought about what I wanted to do next, but pre-run.
Got it. I love how you've mentioned the pause a couple times, because I think that's, if you're able to have that pause or even create that pause and that space, is just critical for decision making, not being rushed, not being forced or pressured into making bad choices. On the surface, the medical industry is pretty different from the sports industry, pretty different from real estate. So, were you making these decisions to pick a particular industry based on contacts you had, or, just where you saw certain industries heading, or how were you making those decisions?
Both of those two things. So I was fortunate to know one of the two founders of Search Center Development. We played basketball together. We played poker together. It was a guy that was from the town I was living in, Great Falls, Virginia. And I approached him. I was watching his success, and I was, I had just, ended my sports ticketing world career. And I said, "You think there's any room in their business for me as a developer?" And he said, "Yeah, but you're going to have to pay your dues. You're going to have to shadow me for several months and see if this is a good fit for you, and we'll see if you're a good fit for it." And so I was prepared to do that, and so I did it. And after about 6 months of shadowing and going to meetings, I realized it looked like a pretty great potential business. And I had asked all the hard questions of all the doctors that were involved in these surgery centers, and I said, "Tell me the worst thing that you heard about Surge Center." And the worst thing anyone ever came up with was, "I wish I owned more shares in the surgery center." So I said, "Okay, this sounds like a pretty good deal."
Sure.
And first year I did two centers, and after 7 years I had done 21 surgery centers. So it was a good fit. My skill set fit really well. I had managed athletes, or strong ego, strong personality people are very much like doctors. So it turned out that was a pretty good skill set I had, and worked well in communicating well and exuding confidence with people that are very confident. So it was a good match.
Yeah, so is this like a franchise model or no?
Not really. It was all
Okay.
internally developed by Search Center. I just
Gotcha.
became one of the development partners
Okay.
and
Got it.
stuck with it for about 7 years, and after about 10 years, all my 21 centers had been sold.
Wow. I love that, you were, again, taking your time, you had the pause, but then even when you were, getting into it, you it sounds like you were very methodical and asking, trying to find out why you shouldn't do this, really,
Yeah.
instead of rushing into it. Anything to add there?
No, I think, I owe a lot to the partners I had in that business. They took me in. They taught me a lot. I feel very appreciative to having been part of it. And I think I added something to the company for a while there. And then I hit a wall again. It was like I literally hit the same wall, which was the question of, do I want to keep doing the same thing over and over again and keep making calls? And I realized I didn't. And I had had success, and that was, the other side of your show. And so it gave me the luxury of, by the way, in the meantime, between my first center and my 21st center, I moved to Puerto Rico. That was in there. And
Okay, got it.
tax purposes, I was able to keep a lot more of my gains from centers.
Okay. And obviously, you don't have to get too personal, but can you speak to any of the specific success you had with the Surge Center that time period?
Each center was extremely profitable. The doctors, the surgeons themselves that performed all the cases owned typically two-thirds of the center, and Search Center Development owned one-third. We didn't charge management fees. We didn't charge development fees. We were literally $1 for us and $2 for the surgeons on the barrel head. And if we made money in a month, we distributed. And so they typically were producing, at one point it was $3 or $4 million a center a year. I mean, they were really profitable operations. They were run
Nice.
really well. I learned a tremendous amount about how to learn how to run a really lean, efficient operation based. But at the same time, I learned that l making little mistakes, really, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. There's something wrong with being afraid to make mistakes. The fear of making a mistake is the error. Make the mistakes, make the corrections, and just keep doing that. And I've
Yeah.
applied new business I'm in with Rev. I learned from the head of Search Center Development. He said to me, we've made a hundred corrections along the way, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's
Right.
not a straight path. You and I talked
Right,
offline.
right. Exactly.
Success isn't a straight path. You're going to
Right.
bounce off the wall. You're going to take a step forward, and maybe it's two steps to the right. So you bounce
Right.
off the wall, you knock yourself back in.
Right, yeah. I love how you frame that as far as that, basically being afraid to make a mistake is a mistake. And there's a lot of risk in doing nothing a lot of times, if you're paralyzed by fear of making a mistake. So we've alluded to it. So you're the co-founding principal and the president and CEO of Rev, which is a multifamily leasing company. Dive into, why did you head in that direction? What real estate background did you have, and what was your decision making at that point?
I've personally been an investor in real estate since I was about 22. Okay.
Okay.
But I wasn't, it wasn't my occupation. And until I got into the surgery center development business, which is already in my, 40s at that point. And so my family is a real estate family. I come
Okay.
from a generation, my dad developed hundreds and hundreds of condominiums and office buildings. And so I mean, I've been on the sideline watching
Yeah.
or hoping learning something. But basically the reason for Rev, I got around to it at some point because my partners in this business are people I grew up with. And
Yeah.
they've been 40-year real estate people, in commercial and residential and some retail. And I went to them after Search Center and I said, "What are you guys up to?" And basically,
Right.
said, "Is there anything we can do together?" And this was the first time my friends and I had actually become business associates, business
Yeah,
partners.
that's awesome.
So it's kind of fun. And I'm actually really enjoying the association with them. And it's easy because, we can yell at each other. We still love each other. But we can get
Yeah.
through problems, adversity, if you call it that,
Right.
and still keep moving forward. There's always adversity in everything. Even at Rev, we
Right.
started this business 6 years ago, 2019, as a replacement for the temporary workers that were getting placed in the leasing offices.
Okay.
We could easily replace those people because they were warm bodies picking up the phone without any training. And so it was a real low barrier to
Low hanging
entry.
fruit. Yeah, sure.
So we trained up a bunch of people. In fact, the first person we trained was a woman that worked in a restaurant. And we trained her into becoming a leasing person, and within 3 weeks she was offered a manager's job by our client. And so we knew that was check number one. We
Right,
knew we
right.
were on the right track. And
Sure.
so we ran this out, and we became effectively, one of two companies that were high profile fire drill save the difficult project leasing companies. We'd go in. Within 90 days, we'd turn the whole thing around. If it was at 78% occupied, we would turn it around to 93% occupied in a few months. And that we were good at it, and we were very good at it. And we developed a lot of skills and knowledge by doing it. We took those skills and that knowledge, and we built tools to give to the marketplace because we realized that, although I think the highest employee number we had was like 79 or 80 people. We weren't going to grow into this 1,000-person team that was going to go run around the country fixing things. But we said to ourselves, "Well, how do we get people to fix themselves? Let's get them the equipment to fix themselves." And we wrote some AI algorithms, and we do some some assessments with, people going out and doing tours and also telephone calls and internet contacts. And we built this, what we call the leasing score, Rev leasing score. And
Okay.
so we assess over a 2 week period a property's ability to perform and obtain leases. And so we've been doing this for about 2 years now, and we've got a bunch of clients that use our assessment, and we have a bunch of clients that use our training. So we on the other side. So once we, it's logical that if you tell someone, hey, you have a few problems or deficiencies in these,
Yeah, I'm gonna give them a
then
solution too.
you help us, right?
Right.
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 And so, well, we say you can help yourselves. We'll kind of, govern over it, but you're gonna
Right.
learn, from our courses and our testing and get better. And
Yeah.
so over course of, anywhere from a 10-week to a, 20-week period, these people can train up and be retested, and it's effective, and it affects the bottom line. And ultimately, if you're affecting the income stream, you're affecting the valuation.
Right, exactly. I mean, we definitely have a lot of commercial real estate guests on the show. I'm more of a residential real estate investor, but yeah, so the occupancy and the I mean, that all ties into NOI and then the value of the property, right? So it's not just a number on a piece of paper. It's a pretty important factor in determining how well the multifamily project is doing.
I would say it's the factor, right? I
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah.
you're asking, if you think about it this way, Jamie, the people responsible for all revenues, I mean, it's not, it's like maybe there's parking fees and pet fees and maybe a couple of points, but 97, 98, 99%
Yeah.
of all revenues have to be generated out of that office. And
Right.
that property can afford to do to promote itself, in addition to, realizing returns for their investors. If you're producing better, let's say you're 2, 3, 4 points better in a submarket than your competition, you can some of that performance, revenue to stay far ahead. There's no reason you can't, advertise more, add more benefits to your property, right? Add more amenities. I mean, all kinds of things that can be done to keep yourself far ahead.
Sure.
So it's not just getting caught up, but staying ahead. Those revenues can be used to create a margin between you and your competition.
Sure, which is increasingly important in today's environment. So as a residential real estate investor, I've got some rental properties. And you know, one of the things I noticed over the years about property management and property managers, first off, that term can be a little misleading, because it really includes both property management and tenant management, and that includes leasing. So, you know, I know that that was a big part of what you did was decoupling leasing from property management. So, and from my experience in the residential space, you've got either essentially, you have property managers who either have a kind of more of a realtor background, an agent background, or an actual like construction or, you know, handyman or property management background. And they're pretty different, but they come to the same place and become a property manager. But then they obviously have strengths and weaknesses. So, but they really, there are two majorly different, you know, functions there. How did you determine to focus on leasing and not so much the property management itself?
Yeah, that's, I'm glad you bring that up, because as we just a little bit talked about, it's such a critical function. The leasing function is so undervalued in the multifamily industry today. It is literally, if you asked a property manager to give me your 25 most important tasks you're doing every day, I would bet you on some of those lists it wouldn't exist. Okay? That's sad, but it's true. And on a lot of those lists, it might be below the top half. And so if you ask me as a property owner, and I'm not a manager, but if I were the manager and you asked me, leasing would be, if not at the top, very close to the top, because it pays for everything. And if you're not converting on your opportunities, on your prospects, the guy down the street is. And that's really bad for your property. And
Sure.
so
Yeah.
you've got these concessions. which is really prevalent in the industry right now. The answer isn't give it away. Okay. The answer is to get better at what you're doing, not to give it away, not to increase your advertising, not to use locators to bring you clients. You know, just do a better job when you get the opportunity. When you, it's like at bats. If you can bat 350 instead of batting 270, you're a Hall of Famer. I mean, literally, just when you get up to bat, hit, get more hits. That's just what this is.
You don't need more at bats if you have more
Really,
quality
not
at bats.
too often. I mean, sometimes they don't have enough traffic, but it's really typically not the problem. The problem is typically the ability to get the job done.
Sure. So in the last 2 years, what have been the biggest challenges you all have faced?
You know, that's a great question. I'd say getting buy-in and oversight from our clients. I think they genuinely want their people to get better, but it does involve some oversight. I mean, we're certainly providing oversight on it, but if the, I find that if the manager of a property is not really bought in and not, you know, urging that leasing person to complete the coursework, and the coursework doesn't get done, the improvement doesn't happen. So it really literally has to be buy-in at the local level. I mean, we can only do so much, and we do, but we can only do so much, and we need that buy-in. And with that buy-in, the success rates are tremendous. So as long as people try to get better, and as long as there's oversight helping them realize it's important to take these courses and get better, it works. But it breaks down also if there isn't.
Understood. And just before we jump into some rapid fire questions here, who is your ideal client avatar for Rev?
Yeah, that right now is proving to be the mid-market. You know, the people that have, you know, 4,000 units to 15,000 units, because they typically don't have their own leasing, their own training and leasing staff, and so they have on-site people, but they don't necessarily have the governance over those tasks. And so we find that we can plug in as almost an outsource for the training of leasing. And so we look for that mid-market that says we have a lot of properties, but we haven't invested in a trainer, we haven't invested in a training department, and we still need the function. We still need this to happen. So, you know, Rev can step in and do that. We still need buy-in on local level, right? We still need buy-in at the site, but we're able to save them money, and we're able to, you know, perform and get their people's performance better and better.
And b again, before we do the rapid fire questions, because I know that those are going to be fun, what's been really surprising with regard to your Rev adventure? Compared to the prior three career seasons you've had, you've already touched on the relationships you have, and you're getting to work with your friends, but maybe something else that's been surprising to you about this venture.
I think the success of the multifamily industry has bred, and I was not in multifamily before this, so this is my exposure to it. I think it's bred some level of complacency. And so, you know, we all know complacency in any business isn't the greatest thing. But the business itself, multifamily is a really successful industry, don't get me wrong. On the other hand, there's still a lot of room for improvement. That's the thing that surprised me the most. We got in here and we found this leasing position being undervalued, and we realized that no matter, you know, we talk about it every single day of our lives in this business, and yet the industry still is not so much revenue driven, but cost saving driven. And so the last 2 or 3 years, there have been some nice moves cost saving wise, but the lack of focus on revenue growth, which is much easier to grow than it is to save costs, is shocking to me, actually. Frankly, it's shocking. And it's right there. And look, our leasing score has a 700 top cap. And like a credit score, which is 850 cap. But if you want to take a guess, I'd love you to take a guess. What we've tested well over 300 individual properties. If you want to take a guess and tell me what you think the highest score, 700 being perfect, what you think the highest score recorded to date is over these 2 years.
550.
That's a good guess. Highest score is 485.
Okay.
So we consider anything over 500 very good, over 600 excellent. And so even on our scale, no one has quite reached the very good leasing level, which means there's opportunity, right? So
Sure.
we're in a good space.
Right.
We get more and more buy-in and people, ready to focus on, investing in their leasing people. If I tell you every dollar invested will produce $10. And so it's totally worth it. And every $10 is probably at some sort of a cap rate of 6 or 7, and you're at like 15 to 20 times that number as a valuation number. So, I mean, it's worth it. I'm not suggesting you do something for, that doesn't have a payback. This one definitely pays back.
Got it. All right, you ready for these rapid fire questions I've alluded
Thanks. Go for it.
to? This one does trip people up sometimes. What do people misunderstand about you, Peter?
About me? Great question. No one's ever asked that question. So what do they misunderstand? I think they see my competitiveness and they think I'm kind of an angry guy sometimes, but I'm not. I'm a pretty happy guy.
I understand that. I can relate to that. What's one of your biggest failures personally? It could be professionally or not, but and what did you learn from that?
Well, my biggest failure professionally was definitely the ticketing company I was involved in. That was a win we turned into a loss, and it bothered me. And decisions were made that could have been avoided and could have been better made. And so I learned from that. I learned not to give control to someone that shouldn't be trusted with full control. And so I've never done that again. And at this point, I'm happy with control by committee. I like people to have a voice in their future, and that's sort of where we're at.
Got it. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Don't waste time. Take advantage of every single moment. Time is your enemy. You will run out of time one day. And so just keep pushing every day. Don't be afraid to make decisions, right? We talked about this a little bit. Fear is your enemy too, in addition to time. Be afraid of the, just jump in. Think about it, plan it, and then jump in.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
I'm a big Winston Churchill fan.
Okay, nice.
He's a guy that wasn't afraid to jump in, and he
That's
never took no as an answer.
Oh,
So I've read about three or four of his biographies. They're
nice.
terrific.
If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it? No strings attached.
Invest it and donate some of it, probably.
Nice. What about in your industry? What controversial techniques or strategies do you see that you obviously don't necessarily agree with?
I think in multifamily specifically, I would say I see ownership giving up too much control to management. I don't agree with that. I think, that's what breeds this level of complacency in it, because the managers are fine with just going to work every day, and they don't necessarily have skin in the game. And so the people that have skin in the game should not abdicate their power. They should stay on top, and things run better when the people that have the risk, money at risk and investment at risk, and they pay attention to it. So I don't like when that decision is pawned off on someone that doesn't have skin in the game.
Makes sense. A lot of our listeners are real estate investors. Maybe they're on the fence about which, niche to get into, and should I be a passive investor or active investor? There are a lot of questions in this, in this on this topic. But what advice would you give to someone who's deciding whether they should be a real estate investor, and if so, how to get into the space?
So I like to be an active investor because I had that that experience with giving away, decision making. So if you can, if you have the opportunity, you have the time to be an active investor, be that. Let me give you an example. So we have a scoring system. The scoring system evaluates how well a leasing team is doing. So now let's say you're in the market to buy something. If you're evaluating the balance sheet of a property, you don't know whether a leasing team has nailed it, gotten, hitting 75% of its, at bats to getting the leases, if they're batting 150. And so our leasing score tells you that. And so if you walk in, and I'm not, this is not a pitch to use us, but it's a pitch to dig deeper into the numbers than just what you're getting. What I would do if I were an investor and I was buying a multifamily property, I'd want to know how well the team on site is performing. If they're performing at a really high level, there's not a lot of upside there.
There's not
Performing
much opportunity.
really, there's a tremendous amount of upside. And
Sure.
so this is just another statistic, another thing, another piece of data to use to evaluate your investment to make sound investments. And so, the leasing is a factor. That's the only thing I would want your listeners to know.
Sure. What about any kind of mindset shifts that you think an investor needs to make along their path?
One, I think, don't look, there's a couple of ways to look at investing. If you're in a bad investment, you got to be able to evaluate it relatively quickly, right? You got to figure out if what you have in there can be moved to a faster horse and should it stay on this horse. And so I was told by the guy who started Surge Center, look at everything every single day with fresh eyes. Evaluate it new every day, and you won't
I like
make
that.
mistakes. And so do that with your investments. Think about them. If you can be liquid, be liquid. Don't just marry them. And if you can get more information about your investments, sometimes if you're a passive investor, you're getting whatever they send you. We could actually provide interesting information to passive investors that want to know how the leasing team's doing on passive investments. So, data is helpful. That's all I can tell you.
Makes a lot of sense. Back to your personal situation. We've already touched on this some, but how has financial abundance made your life better?
It hasn't changed my life that much, although it's given me the freedom to remove some fear in terms of getting into deals, right? If it's not my last dollar, I feel a little less fearful of getting into something. So it gives you that comfort of knowing you'll still be able to eat, you'll still be able to sleep in a nice place, you'll travel. So I look at abundance as a security blanket, kind of.
Makes a lot of sense. We end up talking about the mindset and mental fitness that it takes to be an entrepreneur or a real estate investor. And oftentimes I talk about, instead of asking what if, what if, what if, you change that to even if. So in your case, even if you lost all the money you put into a particular deal, you should be okay because you've experienced financial abundance prior to getting into that deal. So that makes a lot of sense. What is a book or two that you could recommend for our listener?
I read this book about 25 years ago, and I love it. And when someone goes in the hospital, it's a very long book. It's like 1,100. It's called Pillars of the Earth. I happen to like historical fiction. I feel like you're getting a story told to you, but you're learning at the same time. So it's really, really good. And then I read biographies, like the Churchill biographies. I highly recommend. Think of
Nice.
a world leader or an economist or just someone you have some respect for, at least you think you do, and then learn about them. Sometimes it's an eye opener and lose respect,
You might have, yeah, exactly.
I actually gained respect for the man.
Nice. What's one question that you wish I'd asked, but I haven't?
I always ask people, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years? And
Where?
I probably see myself doing something different because frankly, I ch tend to change careers about every 10 years, plus or minus a few
Sure.
years.
Right.
I mean, I think I'll work till the very end. I do enjoy it. My
Yeah.
father, still he was 86, and he's going to be
Nice.
88 on Monday.
Oh,
So
nice.
it keeps you young. It keeps you engaged with people. You're working with people much younger than you typically. And
Right.
that's, they have all the energy and they're just looking to gain some knowledge and insight.
Sure.
So it's great. It's, where would I be? I'll be working at something. I'm not sure what yet.
Yeah, but I love the fact too that it's okay to realize that life has seasons, and even if you do take that space, make a logical decision with the information you have and move in a direction, and it doesn't work out like you'd planned, like you'd hoped, you can realize, well, this is just a season anyway, and there's going to be a new season ahead. Or maybe you're enjoying an amazing season and it helps you appreciate that season. Because it's not going to last forever. So, it takes some pressure off in my mind as far as decision making for an entrepreneur or anyone with regard to their career. Peter, this has been fantastic. Anything else you want to add before we hop off?
I hope something I said in our 45 minutes had some value for somebody, because I thought your questions were great. I thought you did a nice job of
Thank you.
connecting the conversation, and I appreciate you having me on. I really do.
Thanks, Peter. Where can our listeners find you online?
Rev-leasing.com.
Sounds great. Thanks again for your time, Peter. This has been great.
Thank you, Jamie. Enjoyed it a lot.
And to the listener, thank you for your spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together.